This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. Glad you're with us today. I'm Jane Hamden. We begin a series of conversations today about violence and young people in Milwaukee, the lives it ruins, the culture of failure it supports. In Milwaukee, hopelessness turns to anger, which too often turns to gunshots or fighting.
They think that that's the best way to solve something. It's the first thing that comes to their mind, so they just automatically think like, okay, well, this person disrespected me, or they said something I didn't like or did something I didn't like, so therefore I'm going to fight them.
Yeah, and a lot of people do it just because they friends doing it. You know, y'all all one, basically, and if they fight, you're going to fight, so.
That's how people was brought up. Some people was brought up to fight. Like, that's the only way they know how to defend themselves.
WUWM's March Pitroff talked with a group of Milwaukee girls. We'll hear more from those young people tomorrow during All Things Considered. The last Thursday of the month here on Lake Effect, though, is the day that we gather the reporter roundtable to review local stories in the news. Today, our team of Milwaukee editors will share their perspectives on violence among Milwaukee's young people. Ricardo Pimentel is editorial page editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt Chandler is the senior editor of Milwaukee Magazine. And Bruce Murphy is editor of the magazine. Good to see you all again.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thanks, Jane.
We're going to ask you first to talk about something I know you've all reported on, and that's violence in our community. Ricardo, I'm going to start with you because all year long the newspaper's been talking about these issues, and specifically you've been writing and reporting on teen pregnancy. And on the surface, you think, all right, well, you know, that's a big problem, but what does that have to do with violence?
Well, we started taking a preventative approach. Youth violence, I think, has some precursors. Poverty is certainly one of them. And it's an argument of chicken or egg, but teen pregnancy is in the mix as well. Virtually every bad indicator out there for kids often starts with teen pregnancy. They are often the children of single teen moms. And our theory is that if you put a dent in the teen pregnancy problem, you also fix a lot of other things.
All right. Throughout this series, our hope is to focus on solutions. So putting a dent in the teen pregnancy problem, like what? Where does the money go?
Well, first you need a coordinated approach, and the United Way is embarking on trying to accomplish that. But there are also some other pieces missing, like comprehensive sexual health education in the public schools. They have a plan, but not all the kids are getting the message. Not everybody's getting the classes. Not every teacher is trained. A state mandate exists for health education, but that could be everything from nutrition to exercise. It's not necessarily sexual education. And when you teach sexual education, it has to have an abstinence basis, which is good. It's the only guarantee that you won't get pregnant. But there are other methods as well that need to be emphasized.
Well, quickly, I wonder, in your research, have you come across other cities in the country that might be doing a good job or an admirable job at this?
There are cities that have embarked on more comprehensive approaches. Baltimore comes to mind, and Hartford come to mind as cities that have done this. And what they've done is they've just sort of made sure someone is in the community is in charge, is paying attention and making things happen. And I think we have a lot to learn from those cities.
Kurt Chandler, you've done a good bit of reporting on guns, where the guns come from, the impact of guns in our community. What about that aspect of
it? Well, actually, it was a colleague of mine, Mario Quadracci, did a long piece last year on gangs and then another piece on gun violence in Milwaukee. One thing he did, and one thing the magazine published, was a result of a survey of inmates incarcerated on weapons violations and armed robbery. And, you know, they said that their first exposure to guns, to firearms, more than 90% said they had at least one friend or relative killed by firearms. And the average age, according to this survey, of first gun ownership was 13 years old. So kids get their hands on guns, and it ain't hard to do. You know, an anecdote here. I was sitting in the courthouse outside of a courtroom, and I heard a detective and a uniformed cop speaking. And the detective said, "So how's it going?" He said, "Well, you know, arresting people and taking away their drugs and guns." And I think that applies to young people a lot. So what do you do about it? Well, one thing is to crack down on these so-called straw purchases of guns. That is where they send some either unwitting purchaser, buyer into a gun shop or somebody who doesn't have a criminal record to buy a weapon and then bring it out to a felon or somebody who shouldn't have a gun. It's a problem. Kids with guns, it certainly adds to the violence.
Bruce Murphy, what's your, if you had to center in on one dilemma when we look at youth violence in Milwaukee, what do you think it is?
Well, just to start, I mean, I think that you want to talk about it from both the law enforcement perspective and the prevention perspective. And so Ricardo talked about teen pregnancy, and obviously that presents it that way. From a law enforcement perspective, one of the things that the stories that Mario did suggested, there's just a huge number of youth gangs. It's a big problem. You know, tens of thousands of members of youth gangs, and it is a law enforcement problem. But looked at it from the other way, youth have to have something to do. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, obviously they need a good schooling experience. That's important, and that gets back to Milwaukee Public Schools. But they also need somewhere to play. They need something to do. And, you know, recently the Holton Youth Center, the YMCA pulled the funding for that. That was a really important center that served lots of youth. You know, the police were one of the first people to lament that the funding was going, because they recognize what an impact that has on crime. And I think if you go and look at a lot of times when there are, you know, notorious crimes in the city, they happen in neighborhoods where there is not enough recreation for teenagers.
I'd like to hear from any of you. We talk over and over in this community about regional approaches and business leaders getting together with civic leaders and that kind of thing to tackle big problems like this. Is there enough of an integrated effort in Milwaukee? A lot of talk, but are these big players working together here?
You know, we seem to chip away at it and chip away at it. People like Joe Zilber kicks in $50 million and hopes that he gets other matching funds to take a crack at improving the conditions of low-crime neighborhoods. So it's frustrating, and it seems at times we just sort of hope that something takes root.
I think it's really difficult to do a comprehensive plan that attacks all aspects of the problem. I do think M7 is encouraging only because there's been so little regionalism in Milwaukee, and anything is a good thing. And I think to the degree that it does, create economic development, there's going to be some impact in terms of jobs. And obviously, you know, jobs in poor neighborhoods in the central city, that's a huge issue. If you've got a climate where, you know, jobs just aren't expected and aren't there, that's a big problem, and inevitably you're going to turn to violence.
All right. With the Lake Effect Reporter Roundtable, let's turn now to issues of the month. And Bruce Murphy, I want to go back to you because in Murphy's Law, your online column, you've been writing about, is it the demise of the Milwaukee International Film Festival?
Yes. The festival has been around since 2003. It was started by the Shepherd Express, and I think it's been, you know, a wonderful addition to the cultural life of the city. People have really liked it. And suddenly it was in danger of going under. There were questions about, the Shepherd Express essentially ran it. Lou Fortas, the owner of the Shepherd Express, was the only board member on the International Film Festival board. Two of the foundations that were funding it, the Hertzfeld Foundation and the Argosy Foundation, looked askance at that, pulled the funding for a while. The Greater Milwaukee came in to have an auditor look at the books, and Long and short of it is it appears there's been a solution. Fortas had been demanding a certain amount of money be repaid to the Shepherd from the film festival. He got a payment of $54,000, less than he had asked for. The Shepherd Express essentially has spun off the festival. Chris Abley, who runs the Argosy Foundation, is now scrambling to reassemble the staff, which had been laid off. There's talk now that the Milwaukee Art Museum may become the nonprofit umbrella for the film festival, but they have to move very quickly because the film festival is in September. They've, I believe, already had all the entries for the festival submitted, and so they're scrambling to get this thing back together and eventually create a separate nonprofit that will be much more independent and not connected to the Shepherd.
Well, how much of the problem here is that the strength of the International Film Festival is riding on the strength or weakness of the Shepherd Express?
Well, I mean, that was a question. I mean, one of the things that was happening is that a lot of the advertising for the festival was in the Shepherd Express. And they're a logical place to have some ads. The question is how many and whether ultimately it's not better to have a festival that's independent of any media, really, because you want as much media coverage and promotion as you can get.
Ricardo?
Well, I think it'd be a shame if it went away, but there are other questions. I mean, how has attendance been? Has it been as well-received even as it's been run, as it should be? And I don't know the answer to these questions.
Well, these questions aren't being answered in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I mean, it's been interesting and strange how this entire thing's been covered all along.
Yeah, it has. It would be, I think, unfortunate if it disappeared. I mean, it's really a culturally enriching experience, I think, to watch movies, to watch a comedy made in Singapore or a documentary about a expatriated Iraqi family returning to Baghdad, you know, after the fall of Saddam. Let's see how it plays out. Let's hope that it plays out.
Let's move on to transportation, something we don't seem to be able to get away from here. And there's an express bus that's in play, but the bus apparently failed to pick up some bigwigs on its big day when Scott Walker was trying to show it off. What happened there?
Well, you know, there are so many pieces to the transportation puzzle. It just seems almost bottomless lately. You've got Scott Walker now backing this express bus that he brought to town. Mayor Barrett is still proposing a combination of express bus and streetcars for the city, the so-called downtown circulator. Other proposals have been made for rail routes around the city, maybe from UWM all the way out to Miller Park or the county grounds. Now there's talk about expanding I-94 south to the state line, and what happens to the idea of commuter rail? Does it get squeezed out in the process as all the funds go to more pavement? You know, the local elections are over, and it seems that it's time maybe to put politics aside. But I don't know if that's going to happen. Now you hear that Scott Walker has ambitions, oh my gosh, to run for governor, possibly. So he's still a political animal, and I don't know.
Public transportation does not play outside Milwaukee.
It doesn't, and he's been, I think, a barrier in a compromise between Barrett and Walker in getting something done. We've said it here before.
We'll probably say it again, Bruce Murphy.
The only thing I would say is that there is no way to solve this problem without some source of tax money. There has to be some tax money. I mean, whatever transportation we do, it's going to cost something. And the issue, and that's really to some degree been, to a large degree, really been the non-starter. And then added to that has been Barrett periodically has talked about, well, if we're going to have a sales tax for this, I also want to add on some other city services, which seems to me sort of a non-starter. So it's been very difficult to get any clear consensus.
Here's the math on that. 1% sales tax on $20,000 of purchases is $200. Am I right?
No, I don't know.
$200 is what? Maybe 3 tanks of gas these days? So, you know, people would rather pay $4 plus for a gallon of gas than fund some sort of public transit.
Ricardo, apparently. Last word on this one?
Well, I think they've both touched on the crucial aspects here, the funding. There has to be agreement, and our favorite is sales tax, a regional sales tax, because we view this as being a regional economic development necessity. And the other part is the wisdom of putting all of this money into freeways and not into transit. A transportation fund shouldn't just be a freeway and roads fund. It should be a transit fund as well.
And with that, we are out of time. Thanks, all of you, for coming in again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bruce Murphy is editor of Milwaukee Magazine. Kurt Chandler is a senior editor of the magazine. Ricardo Pimentel is editorial page editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They join us at the end of each month for the Lake Effect Reporter Roundtable. We'll take a break now. When we come back, Milwaukee historian John Goerta on the roots of violence in the city. How about Northside gangs in the early 1900s?
There was one especially colorfully named gang, the Titonia Indians, who were kind of the terrors of the near north side. And you look at the, you know, that kind of activity today, you think of it as sort of Bowery Boys, innocent fun. These guys were killing each other. No, this was not good, clean fun.
Back with Lake Effect after a break here on Milwaukee Public Radio.